everyone, and thank you for being here. The time is 4:04. This is the Transportation Committee. Today is quorum is present. Today is Monday, March 17th, 2025. We have a late start at 4:05. We're in room 110 of the Minnesota Senate building. In accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's meeting: Senator Herr from St. Paul, Senator Farnsworth from Hibbing, and Senator Carlson from Eagan. Okay, am I the only one that is on the edge of my seat waiting for the DPS traffic safety report? Seriously, I am, because I worked on the county road safety plan. So today we have three reports we'll be hearing. Thank you, Senator Dibble, for letting me chair today. He knew how excited I was. actually, he has a hearing. Our first testifier will be Mike Hansen from DPS, and I'm not sure who else will be coming up. Members, you have two reports in your notes that relate to this. That relate to this presentation. You have the legislative report dated February 27th, and then the slides. I'm told to remind you to the testifiers to speak loudly and clearly and through the chair as we direct questions at you. So with that, Mr. Hansen, would you like to introduce yourself and begin your presentation?
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Mike Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the Department of Public Safety's Office of Traffic Safety. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with you today and to share kind of a high-level view of the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety's annual report. I will do my very best to live up to the chair's expectations for today's presentation. So I have a brief PowerPoint. I'm going to go through that fairly quickly, understanding that we have some time constraints, and then answer any questions that we have time to get to. So with all that being said, we will start right off. First of all, kind of taking a look at where we're at in 2025. Now, if you look at the graph on the left, it shows that the number of fatalities in January from 2020 through 2025 really has taken a significant jump upwards. Now, I do need to qualify the 2025 numbers because they're still preliminary, and there's probably going to be some adjustment there as time goes on. And then the graph on the right illustrates the overall fatalities between 2010 and 2024. And the unfortunate news with that particular graph is it does tend to reflect an upward trend line in the number of fatalities taking place on Minnesota roads. Speed continues to be our number one concern. Speed, as many of you may have heard me say, is the one thing that makes every other mistake or bad decision worse. It takes away time and distance and the ability to fix something that went wrong. And so 2021 certainly was a horrific year for us, and that number has continued steadily through 2024 and continues into 2025 with a bit of a caveat in that 2025, in January, we did see the return of some actual winter weather, which tends to slow people down and reduce the severity of the crashes that are occurring out there. Overview of 2024, and again, all of you have the report in front of you that has much more detail than I'm covering today, but again, we focus on the big four contributing factors that lead to the vast majority of the fatal crashes that occur out there. As I mentioned, speed is number one on our list. It is the number one significant factor that leads to injury. Speed is kinetic energy that causes damage, that causes injury, which can result in death. Alcohol and other impaired driving continues to be one of our troublesome spots as well. Anywhere between 24 and 27,000 Minnesotans every year are arrested for an impaired driving offense. And the number of people killed as a result of those bad decisions continues to be at an unacceptably high level. Unbelted. We have almost a 95% compliance rate with belt usage in Minnesota. We have 5% of the population that hasn't taken 2 minutes to put, or 2 seconds to put that seatbelt on every seat, every trip, every time, but yet they're involved in almost one-third of our fatalities. And I just clarify, While we identify those big four, they seldom happen by themselves. There are always going to be combinations that aggravate each other. So an alcohol-impaired driver without that seatbelt on has a crash, that's going to result in a fatality or a serious injury oftentimes. So what are we doing? What are we doing to try and fix this problem that we have on Minnesota roads? Well, if you remember a couple years ago, the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety was authorized by the legislature as the new home for the Toward Zero Deaths program. TZD, in a nutshell, is a good example of government that works because it brings three state agencies, public safety, transportation, and health together in a holistic way to try and address some of the troublesome things that lead to deaths and serious injuries on our roads. So, what are the action-oriented strategies that the council has been focusing on? Well, we have the Strategic Highway Safety Plan process that we're working closely on with MnDOT. This is the 5-year roadmap for making Minnesota roads safer, and it is up for renewal, and we've been working on that, and the draft report is now being circulated for review amongst the stakeholders. We have, through the Advisory Council, formed a subcommittee on traffic incident management, and also a legislative policy subcommittee and a Safe Roads Coalition policy. Our Safe Roads Coalitions are locally led traffic safety advocacy groups in many communities across Minnesota. Currently, using federal funding, we're able to support about 20 of those, but we do have another 30 unfunded coalitions who are active and who do contribute to traffic safety in their communities when their staff and resources allow. Some other safety improvements. The Federal Highway Administration, this is primarily a MnDOT, but it also partners and comes across to some DPS functions, identify hazardous roadway features and find corrective actions to take place there. Projects to improve highway safety-based crash history. So we look at the data, where are the crashes happening, why are they happening, how do we fix the infrastructure so that we can prevent the mistakes or the behavior that lead to those crashes. Highway Safety Improvement Plan funding, that's exactly what MnDOT does. They take a look at those high-profile areas and they use that HSIP funding to correct those deficiencies to the extent that the funding allows. And these projects and strategies all work together with the behavioral aspect that comes from the Department of Public Safety, as well as the public health aspect, which we rely on our partners at the Department of Health for. Some roadway system improvements that we take a look at, and some of these, again, were authorized by the 2023 legislative session, taking a look at high-risk rural route systems. The vast majority, 70% of our fatalities roughly, occur outside of the 7-county metro area. And of those, roughly 60% of those are taking place off of the state or U.S. trunk highway system. So we really need to drill down and take a look at those county roads, at those city streets, at those township roads, and look at the transportation system as a whole and identify those holistic strategies that can help us fix those infrastructure and behavioral problems. The 2023 legislature was also responsible for funding a significant statewide speed reduction project. We work with our law enforcement partners all across the state, the State Patrol obviously, but almost 300 other agencies as well, to target those high-risk, high-speed rural roadways where those crashes have been occurring. A real exciting problem that'll take place in the southwestern part of the state as well as in the Arrowhead is a NHTSA grant that the EMS providers up there that is going to provide telehealth medicine in the back of those ambulance and paramedic rigs. This will connect a trauma doctor or a high-level paramedic with those EMTs that are on scene and help them assess the patient and provide the proper level of care. This is a big deal that's coming out. I think there's close to $12 or $14 million in federal funding coming into FL as part of that process. Safe road zones. Another product of the 2023 legislative session, a partnership between MnDOT and DPS to address not only the infrastructure challenges in certain identified corridors, but also the behavioral challenges that go along with that. Currently, I think we have 12 identified safe road zones across the state where various infrastructure and driver behavior improvement plans and projects have been implemented. And then finally, last year, we held the first tribal traffic safety summit that we've had in several decades in Minnesota. It was a resounding success to the point where this year's tribal traffic safety summit will now encompass 2 days instead of the day and a half that we had last year. So that is a big step for us in the tribal nations areas. Enforcement and education. We can't talk about traffic safety without talking about the importance of enforcement as the one tool that comes off the shelf right now that can change driver behavior. And so police traffic services are absolutely part of the grants and the programs that we have operated and that have been discussed at the advisory council. Law enforcement public engagement program. So taking that law enforcement contact with the public beyond just that enforcement realm and allowing our law enforcement agencies to use grant funding to hold community events to educate and perform outreach efforts to their communities on the importance of traffic safety and safe driving. Impaired driving enforcement, obviously, today, St. Patrick's Day. We have over 300 agencies across the state that we are funding that will be out there making sure that everybody gets home to wake up and look for the four-leaf clovers in a couple months when the grass starts to green up a little bit. The speed-focused enforcement efforts, we've talked about that. A really exciting project that will take place in the St. Cloud region this summer over the 100 deadliest days, Memorial Day through Labor Day, is a data analytics project that the Office of Traffic Safety has been working on with a couple of large IT companies. This is actually taking a look at not only historic crash data, but also real-time data to identify not just the corridors that are dangerous, but when those corridors are dangerous, day of week and time of day, so that we can work with our law enforcement partners and others to put available resources in those hotspots when the analytic program tells us that it's most likely for a fatal or serious crash to take place. This is a first of its kind program, and it's really exciting. It isn't completely built out yet, and that's why we're doing the pilot project, is to take it out for a test drive and figure out what else we need to add to it. But we're excited to be rolling that out as our partners in the St. Cloud region. And then finally, our paid and earned media project. We can't solve this by enforcement. We can't solve it by infrastructure. We have to solve it by public buy-in, and that's that outreach and engagement. And that's how our media partners come to the table and help us out. And then finally, last year, the Office of Traffic Safety launched the Road Safety Information Center. This is a public portal that is mobile friendly that allows anybody in the state to take a look at a deep level of crash statistics and traffic safety information. I would encourage all of you to take the opportunity to take a look at that website, take a drive around and see what you like, and please feel free to provide us with some feedback if there's something that we can do better or that something that is missing that you've identified. And with that, Madam Chair and members, that brings the presentation part of my conversation to a close, and I'd be happy to answer any questions in the time that you have available.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Do we have any questions from committee members? Senator Howe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, you know, coming from that St. Cloud region, I would like to know exactly what corridors in that St. Cloud region are we looking at? Because I know what we believe are the worst areas, but I'd like to know what MnDOT and DPS is really concentrating on.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, Representative Howell, thanks. Great question. We're looking at three counties. We're looking at Stearns, Sherburne, and Benton that all touch that St. Cloud region. And so I think we have 14 or 15 different law enforcement agencies that are participating in it. And what, in a very high level, what the analytic model does is it takes a look at the data and it identifies the corridor and the roadway type, as well as narrowing it to the day of week and time of day when that crash is likely to occur. I'd be more than happy to take a much more in-depth run through the program with you if you'd like, sir.
Senator Howe, done. Senator Dibble, yeah. And then Senator Pa. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director Hansen, for all the work and research in the report. It's very informative. I'm sure you share the frustration to see the trends generally going in the wrong direction. There's a little variation. You know, see crash trends tilting down, but fatality trends tilting up, serious injury trends. The slope is much steeper than we would want. And the PDO, the property damage only proportion increasing, I suppose that's better than having a proportion of injuries and deaths increasing. And you say most of it is attributable to speed. And if you drilled down on this, and I missed it, I apologize. But why? I think we understood during the paradox during COVID. Speed increased dramatically, even though the traffic volume decreased dramatically. I think there was some kind of an inverse relationship between the two. Wide open roads, everyone thought they could just do what they want. There were other things going on, I think, that created a level of social disorder, tension, stress, whatever. Why haven't things returned back to normal? You know, Minnesota was, you know, really proud of moving the trends in the right direction with the coordinated efforts of the Towards Zero Deaths program. Is it just carryover like we're seeing in a lot of things, in a lot of areas of our life and society from that which kind of deteriorated during COVID, and we're hoping to kind of get back to the way things were, and that's just going to take some time, or is there something else happening?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, it's a great question. I wish I was smart enough to give you the be-all, end-all answer, but I think you hit on it. There's a lot of different things that continue to drive it. I think one of the big ones that we're trying to take a look at is a lot of those bad habits that developed during COVID have carried over. We have a COVID hangover on our roads, and the way that some continue to use them as a private playground when, in fact, they're a public infrastructure. And so I think, you know, there's that's in play. You know, as a society, we're busier than we ever have been before. The roads are busier than they ever have been before. And quite honestly, the some of the cars that are out there are made to go much faster than they ever have been before. And so I think a lot of that just kind of comes together in this big soup that we're trying to strain out and get to those root causes. Certainly infrastructure can have some effect on that. Enforcement certainly can have an effect on that. But again, going back to that COVID hangover, many of the law enforcement agencies we work with still struggle with staffing. And if they don't have staffing, then we can't put a traffic unit out there. And so we're trying to find different creative ways to be able to support those efforts as well as the community engagement part of it. And this is why you need to obey the speed limit.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you. All right, well, I look forward to the continued work in this area. My ears did prick up when you started to touch a little bit on the proportion of crashes, you know, whether fatal or involving serious injury or property damage on the state-owned system and the local system. If you could refresh us, I didn't quite catch the detail of what the relative proportions are, number one. Number two, you had mentioned about really drilling down and understanding better crash data, crash causes, et cetera, on the local system. Wondering what that effort might look like. We had a fairly good discussion a few days ago about local road design as it relates to sensitive users and community needs and local control. And hoping that your work in this area can inform that conversation.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, that's again a great question, and this is where MnDOT and DPS, and to a certain extent our partners at HELP, are all working together, looking at, you know, land use patterns and, you know, road use patterns. Who are the users that are most likely on that road? Is it primarily passenger vehicles? Is it passenger and commercial? Are there vulnerable road users there? And so that's where some of those infrastructure improvements can be born and be developed. But along with those, we also have to look at the real-time behavioral aspects that we can try and address right now. But that goes back to that whole holistic Towards Zero Deaths approach to solving traffic safety challenges.
So as a reminder, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Towards Zero Deaths is the four E's, right? Engineering, education, enforcement, and emergency services.
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I would add one more. It's everyone. We all have a vested interest in traffic safety across the state. So five E's, sir, but very good on the four.
Wow, impressive. Senator Dibble, are you done with your questions?
Thank you,
Senator
Pa?
Thank you, Chair. I'm wondering, for your public awareness campaign, what does those campaigns look like? I mean, when you're talking about public awareness campaigns, I don't think I have seen one that I identify as a campaign for that purpose. So I'm just wondering how you're educating the public.
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair and Senator Faub, a good question. And it takes two forms. There is the paid media that we buy, and then there's the earned media that we get. I did a press conference on Friday, and I'm doing another one tomorrow. So those are our earned media, where we get to talk to the media and they get our message out for us. The paid media, we work with a media buyer, and they also do a lot of our content creation. And we have a variety of educational waves that we roll out during the course of the year. Right now, part of that is the St. Patrick's Day thing. The next big one you're going to see is the April Distracted Driving Awareness Month. And then May, we roll into Click It or Ticket, trying to get everybody to put the seatbelt on. 4th of July, we talk about impaired driving. So all of those are coordinated, and we use everything from billboards to train wraps to bus wraps to billboards on the side of trucks. A lot of social media effort goes into that. And we're very deliberate in making sure that we get into as many markets and as many communities across the state as we can, using that wide-ranging net. Now, our budget isn't huge, and so that might be why you may not see it all the time, but it does come out there in our focus waves.
Thank you. Senator Pa, follow-up?
Thank you for that answer. And I don't think that I have seen it, but I also wonder what the effectiveness or impact on behavior it really has. And I bring this up because maybe we need to rethink about how we get people to change their behavior. Because talking about the fatalities, that's great. Talking about how we should be driving safely, that's great. But does that really change behavior? So when my daughter was going for her permit license, I just tell you how I did it, how a mom does it. And not saying that this is the right way, okay? But I often talk to her about the responsibility of being a driver and how much responsibility that is behind a vehicle that can kill people. Mm-hmm. But what I found was talking to her about driving safe or whatever doesn't really work. What did work was I brought up videos on YouTube of crashes that happens when people are either distracted or they are they're texting or they're just speeding. And I know this may seem extreme, but I will tell you, it did actually make an impact and change her behavior, which was, I showed her, if you did this, you see this crash, this will happen. And that means someone will die, someone will get hurt, and it will be because of you, and can you live with that? And when I had showed her all of that, she really understood what can really happen. If she got distracted, if she really didn't take the responsibility of being a driver seriously, and this is a 16-year-old. But I think that people remove themselves from the idea that everybody's supposed to drive safely, because we all know things, bad things can happen. But when you actually see it and you realize how horrific some of these crashes are and the people whose lives are impacted by it, you really take it in, and I really understand it. So I'm just wondering, I wonder if we are doing enough with our public awareness campaigns, and if maybe we need to do more in a different approach. I'm not saying my approach is the right approach. I'm just saying we need to do something more, because obviously fatalities have not gone down, and every fatality is one too many. The other thing I'm wondering is, this is a question for you now, is whether it's drunk driving or distracted driver, if something happens, they get ticketed, but I'm wondering if there's any kind of education that's required for them to go through as part of that process. Because a ticket, that's great, but is there any required education that they're required to go through in order for them? I don't know what the consequences are now, but I would think their driving privileges. Right. Otherwise, that'd be revoked.
Mr. Hansen?
Madam Chair, Senator Pop, really good discussion. If I can just touch really quickly on the media part, I'd be happy to share with you our annual report that we put together for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, showing them exactly what we did in our media activities for 2024, including all the number of impressions and all of the strategies that we did. So I'll make sure I get a copy of that to you. And when you talk about, you know, how do we educate our teens, that's also a great discussion. We've recently started working with our partners at MnDOT and Department of Health, Project Teen Impact, which is going into 10th grade schools, or 10th grades across the state. And it is really getting some strong legs and is being really readily accepted. It focuses on peer-to-peer messaging, which has proven to be a very effective way for teens to be influenced, so to speak. You know, the kind of the scary part of it, I'll really date myself. I mean, driver's ed in 1978, when I went through, that's what you did, is you watched the old 8mm films of, you know, prom night and this and that and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does have an effect, but, you know, you got to find a balance with that. So it's all very good. And now I forgot the second part of the question. I'm sorry.
It was about updating your education and your media.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was tickets. It's whether... I'm sorry. It was whether people who get tickets have to go through any education process to get their privileges back.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members. Currently there is no typical sanction for that type of thing. If somebody racks up enough moving violations, they will have their driving privileges suspended. There is not currently a vehicle for that outreach or that education. Certainly willing to have some discussions if that's something that members would like to explore further. That type of thing could be developed.
Mm-hmm. Senator Pine? Thank you for your responses, and thank you, Chair. I would love to explore that more, just because I feel like there has to be more in educating people, something that goes a little bit deeper, that maybe makes a better, more impactful on the people who are violating these, especially repeat violators. Because I truly believe that driving should be a privilege. It's not a given. People who drive, there's responsibility to that, and it is a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pa. Senator Carlson online has a question, and then we'll go to Senator Nelson. Senator Carlson, can you unmute yourself?
I should be unmuted. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You need to talk a little louder, Senator Carlson.
Let me get my face closer to the computer. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, but you know, some of them I think I'll wait until I see Mr. Hansen personally. But I do want to ask one important one that came up in my mind as you were going through the numbers of deaths that are attributed to certain characteristics of the violation, I guess you could say. And just speeding is not necessarily the cause of a death. It's speeding combined with something else, like loss of control, following too close, you know, other things like that. And I'm wondering, do you have the secondary contributor to the death that actually can be addressed besides speeding?
Thank you. If for those of you that didn't hear, I believe Senator Carlson asked if the crash data that you have that attributes to the four main causes, if you have identified a secondary contributing factor. I believe that's what Senator Carlson asked. Mr. Hansen?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, members. As I mentioned earlier in my testimony, rarely is there a single contributing factor of those four. It's usually a combination thereof. Probably the most common one that we see is either speeding and impairment or speeding and lack of seatbelt use. Those are the probably the most frequent two that come together. But sometimes we see three, sometimes we see all four of these things coming into play, leading to those fatal and serious injury crashes.
Senator Carlson, do you have any follow-up?
Yes. Yes, I have lots of follow-ups. Does this sound any louder now? I looked at my my volume on.
It's a little bit better.
Okay, good. Well, my next question is, if the department thinks that we should be doing, you know, expanding the 55 Alive classes or some kind of incentive to make sure that people are caught up to date. You know, I took my driver's test substantially before you did. And, you know, we've had lots of things that are technology improvements, that are driving improvements. I even took my driver's test, my first one, before right turns on red was legal. You know, and there's lots of things like that that I think seniors need to know about. For instance, even how to drive through roundabouts, things that I think make people more confident in driving and probably a little bit better informed on what new laws are passed. So what do you think about the 55 Alive classes? And I think we did talk about that in maybe another committee, that that's primarily promoted by insurance companies, but should we be mandating an updating in people's awareness just because of the number of things that are new technologies?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, great point, great question, and something that I do believe in. I think, you know, certainly consequences change driver behavior, but we can also use positive consequences to do that. As Senator Carlson mentioned, the insurance benefit to being a safe driver. And programs like, you know, 55 Alive or, you know, Alive at 25, things like that. Any opportunity we have to further educate the motoring public, especially as complicated as today's motor vehicles are becoming, would be a positive step. And I would be more than willing to have conversations into what that could look like.
Thank you. Senator Carlson, do you have any follow-ups?
Not at this time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I was thinking about the 100 deadliest days, and of course, those are coming up soon. Before my time in the Senate, I gave presentations to our high school students about the 100 deadliest days. I don't know how impactful those were. I certainly hope they were. It certainly alerted them to the challenges. But I also think one of the things that was the most valuable in the counties where I live, Olmsted County, Dodge County, that I represent, a number of times our sheriffs would bring a car that had been in a crash. Sometimes it was a local crash. Sometimes it was put in front of the high school before prom or graduation. That's a little before the 100 deadliest days. But the challenge, and I think that was very impactful. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to see a car that has been scrunched up to a very small piece where you could not imagine a body surviving in there. I think those things are incredibly valuable, and I really appreciate my local sheriffs and police officers who have taken the time. I don't know how they do all that or get those crashes, but I think that says a lot. And to Senator Paugh's point, I do think the public education is incredibly important, and I really salute those teachers who asked me to come in to give the 100 deadliest days, because I know that their curriculums are stuffed and they've got lots to get through. But I think those things are important. And then I had one kind of unrelated question, but it had to do with what's causing a number of these fatalities and why perhaps is it increasing instead of going down. And I didn't see in the report anything about weather. I mean, it appears that, you know, some winters we have much more dangerous weather than others. And is there any correlation, or where would it be? I didn't exactly see it in today's documents, but I would imagine the severity of our winter or maybe other weather-related conditions also influence the number of fatalities. I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you for that. And Sheriff Torgerson is a true traffic safety champion. I really enjoy working with him. And, you know, where you're coming from on that is that's where we need to go. You know, that is kind of the approach that we're looking at, and how do we bring that out, and how do we expand that and make it available?
Thank you. Senator Nelson, are you good?
So how you make what available? Please kind of refresh your question, your answer.
Maybe I misheard the question, ma'am. If you could.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, actually, I had, one response is, yes, we want to make that more available so more teens can see what happens in these horrible fatalities. But my second question was really kind of totally unrelated to just teenagers. My second question had to do with weather. And the weather seems to, I mean, we have very different winters in this state, and I didn't see anything in your documentation about how weather impacts the number of fatalities. I'm assuming it does, but I wondered if you could comment on that.
Mr. Hanson?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, weather absolutely does have an impact. And all I can do is I can compare the first quarter of 2024 with the first quarter of 2025. If you remember last winter in the first quarter, we didn't have any winter until almost the end of March. As a consequence, we saw a significant, huge increase in the number of fatal and serious crashes that took place. Now, when we come into 2025, when we've actually had some of those weather events take place, they tend to keep the speeds down, which keeps the severity down. So at year to date, we're 14 fatalities behind where we were year to date last year. That's, you know, about 18% fewer. And so when we, you know, go back and we look even further back than that, we see that very same pattern. But the reason 2025 is looking more positive than 2024, and one of my researchers pointed this out to me, is because 2024 was really horrific. We saw 478 deaths in 2024 on Minnesota roads, and that first quarter is what set the tone for the rest of the year.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Others? Anybody? Senator Howell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'm looking at the listing of all the speeding citations issued, and whether the citations trend is up or down. My question is there any data, is there something similar to this showing where the citations were? We know where they're issued at, but where the people were from that actually got the ticket? Whether they were in the county, from the county where they got the ticket, or were they passing through, were they from another state? What, you know, it'd be interesting to me to see if they were local folks from that county or whether they were someone coming through the county. It'd be interesting to see that if that could be made available. I don't know if you have it.
Mr. Hanson, do you have that data?
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, we could probably do a deep dive into some of the court data and come up with that. I can tell you, you know, based on my previous career experience, that quite often, other than on the interstates, a significant portion of the citations that are issued to local or regional residents. It's not necessarily that transient traffic other than on the interstates or some of the major U.S. highways.
Senator Howell? Anybody? Senator Jasinski?
Madam Chair. Senator Howe, are you in any of these statistics?
Senator Howe?
Not this year. Not for the year it's taken any data. How about you? Same?
Senator Jasinski?
Madam Chair, no, sir.
How about anybody else? Anybody? Senator Dibble?
I hate, got Met Council sitting here waiting to go here, but I wanted to pick up on Senator Paz's questions. Someone I'm related to used to be a driver in another state and ended up going to traffic school a number of times. That was kind of their system. If you got a certain number of points, then you had to go to traffic school and work off your points. Has Minnesota ever considered that idea or not, A and B? If not, is there any evidence that it's effective in improving driver behavior? I don't know that it's been effective in the case of
your
a
relative
person I'm related to. Other than I think the passage of time and the general mellowing of
Mr.
energy
Hansen.
Might have contributed to fewer traffic citations.
Well, I know in Wisconsin they use points because my nephew just lost his license due to an excessive amount. So, Mr. Hansen, do you have any feedback?
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, I'm reaching way back into my memory banks. I have two older brothers that grew up in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And at that time, I vividly remember my next oldest brother going to traffic school at least twice in that time period. I don't know at what point that was eliminated, but I'm a believer in an educated populace. If they have the information and the knowledge, they're more inclined to make a good, safe decision. And so it is certainly a concept I would be more than willing to take a look at and do some research in to see what other states do with that.
Senator Dibble?
Yeah, I mean, I would be interested in knowing if it's, if, I mean, I would never want to establish this elaborate, expensive thing. Although I'm sure the offenders basically pay for it with their fines and fees and whatnot. But, you know, it would be an elaborate undertaking that would create a lot of effort. If it's highly effective, great, let's go for it. But if it's just not, and it's just, you know, it was an idea and just kind of stuck in some states and never was disbanded because it's just the way they do things, then let's not do it. Thanks.
Other members? I just want to bring up something. So I did work on the County Road Safety Plan. I don't remember when it started, but it's been a decade at least. And something that, just a reflection I have is, I believe all 87 counties have implemented a County Road Safety Plan that included, and I'm just bringing this up so you guys all notice this when you're driving, chevrons at every curve. So now as you drive on a rural road, you'll see those chevrons, you'll see advisory signs. We went through and identified all of the curves on the county's system that, county state aid and county road system that required you to slow down to safely traverse them. Widened edge stripes, so we went from 4-inch to 6-inch. Senator Nelson, your county engineer was one of the leaders here, so Olmsted County was like one of the very first counties to have these incorporated. Widened shoulders, because a shoulder drop-off is often a cause for a crash. Rumble strips on the edge lane and on center line. We addressed some of those curves that were so hazardous that they wouldn't even... that a sign would not be enough. And I'm trying to think, and then just advisory signage. And so I wonder if, because every one of our counties implemented those kind of, we call it the big book of ideas or the low-hanging fruit, I just wonder if, you know, we did drop the number of crashes, and now people are catching up to us. But notice all of those things as you drive, especially in the rural areas, and they have significant impact on the number of crashes. Now that I've mentioned it, you'll notice it all the time. But it was really some very easy things that county engineers were happy to do in Minnesota. So any other feedback for our testifier? All right, thank you very much, Mr. Hansen. I appreciate your time. For the committee members, we're just gonna do one other report in the interest of time. So we'll have Met Council come up and talk about their transit safety and rider experience report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Yeah, members, Senate is reconvening at 5:15. We'll make sure that we're done in time for anybody who has to go back to the floor. Welcome. As your testifiers sit down, Judd, if you want to introduce yourself and talk about your report. Again, we have the presentation, and then we also have a report. I don't know if we have a copy.
Oh, okay.
Your presentation's in here, too.
Yep.
All right.
Madam Chair and members, we were happy to listen to that important conversation as well. So thank you, and we are here to talk about our safety and security report. I have got Jillian Linnell, who's our chief of staff at Metro Transit, who will be able to walk through that. I also have Brian Funk with Metro Transit as well. We can speak, if we have time, we can potentially go to the cleaning standards report. But to kick things off, this is really important work for us as well, and I think it's important that everyone who travels and works on our system deserves to have an experience that's safe, clean, and welcoming. And a lot of this work has been done over the past few years. I want to give Senator Dibble, former Representative Hornstein, a ton of credit for the work they did with us, actually visiting with us outside of the session, coming to our Haywood facility to have these conversations. I know we did that a number of times, and we're starting to see some of the fruits of that as well. So with that, I'll just stop and turn this over to Jillian, and we'll start with our presentation.
All right, thank you. Does she have to introduce herself? Okay, please introduce yourself. Yeah. Thank you.
Sounds good. All right, good afternoon. My name is Jillian Linnell. I'm the Chief of Staff, as mentioned, of Metro Transit, and I'm going to present a quick overview of the Transit Safety and Rider Experience Legislative Report. So as I'm sure all of you are familiar, this report requires a number of elements that are presented here on the slide. We're going to run through these in my upcoming slides in a bit of detail, but at a quick rapid pace. And this is all tied to the report that was submitted to the legislature in advance of the February 15th deadline. So in the spirit of providing an overview of transit safety issues and actions taken by the council to improve safety, I wanted to start by taking a moment to introduce the Metro Transit Safety and Security Action Plan, which is the framework that guides our collective effort to ensure that everyone who travels and works on our system deserves to have an experience that is safe, clean, and welcoming. The plan was adopted by the Met Council in June of 2022 based on recommendations from the Met Council's Metro Transit Police Work Group. And includes over 40 actions organized around the three areas that are included here, which is improving conditions on the system, training and supporting our employees, and engaging customers and partners. Every action identified in the Safety and Security Action Plan is in motion, and staff provide a quarterly update to the Met Council. Jumping into some of the rider experience elements covered in the report, the statute required the council to adopt a rider code of conduct for transit riders, which was adopted in December of 2023. It includes elements such as the requirements to pay your fare and wear appropriate clothes, and then also outlines behaviors that are not allowed, and also reminds riders of illegal behaviors. Signs outlined in the code of conduct are displayed at all required locations, which includes 60 light rail platforms, 164 bus rapid transit station platforms, and 23 transit centers. We have also met the requirement establishing clear designated paid fare zones at each light rail transit station where the council utilizes self-service barrier-free fare collection. This work included the installation of new signs and the painting of new boundary lines. This was also completed in September of 2024, and there is an example of one of these signs included on the slide and in the report. And finally, central to improving the rider experience are the standards of cleanliness, the standards on cleanliness and repair of transit vehicles and stations, which my colleague Brian will cover in greater detail at another presentation, in which we also had a report submitted to the legislature to detail. All right, the remainder of the slides are going to focus on what we commonly refer to as the layers of presence across our system. Metro Transit users have told us that having a strong official presence is key to providing a consistently safe and welcoming experience. And it is through the effective partnership across all of these layers that we believe we can make real strides to providing the experience our riders deserve. Starting with the Transit Service Intervention Project, which was established by the legislature in 2023 as a one-year pilot, the goal was to provide coordinated, highly visible interventions on light rail transit lines that provide for enhanced social services outreach and engagement, code of conduct regulation, and law enforcement. To do this, Metro Transit partnered with 10 community organizations who, over the course of the pilot, contacted nearly 15,000 riders, with more than 41% of these contacts resulting in service referrals. A breakdown of the service referrals shows that the need for shelter and housing resources were the highest referral type. Per the legislation, the pilot concluded on June 30th, 2024. However, Metro Transit has developed a transition plan that guides how we are continuing to partner with community-based organizations for intervention services and how we are working to formally integrate TSIP into TRIP. Supplemental security. Metro Transit has also contracted supplemental security officers to be additional presence at most of our, to a number of our locations that are outlined here. On average, 40 security officers provide more than 1,600 hours of coverage each week across these locations. Through this program, we have seen reported crime at these locations decline. And building on this, Metro Transit's adopted 2025 budget includes resources to further expand on the use of supplemental security. Moving on to our next layer of presence are the Transit Rider Investment Program, or TRIP agents. This program was established by the legislature and calls for the establishment of non-sworn uniformed personnel who are responsible for a variety of duties that support the rider experience, including enforcing fare compliance and aiding customers. In October of 2023, the Met Council adopted the TRIP policy and resolution for the established fine structure, and the program was formally launched in February of 2024, with agents starting on board the Metro Blue and Green lines. As of December 2024, TRIP agents are now also on board Metro C and D lines. In alignment with the statute, TRIP personnel are trained to inspect fares and ensure compliance, issue administrative citations, educate riders on code of conduct, assist customers with wayfinding, transit information, or other questions, assist customers with limited mobility, provide outreach materials to individuals to connect them to services for mental health, substance abuse, or housing, and administer Narcan for individuals who are experiencing a drug overdose. They wear clearly defined uniforms, carry two-way radios, and have aerosol devices. As of the end of 2024, there were nearly 60 TRIP agents. That number is now closer to 70. And our 2025 approved budget aims to grow the program to 100 agents.
And Madam Chair, I would just like to add for some context for the committee that this TRIP program is kind of the grown-up program of our administrative citations that we brought to the legislature for many, many years. We started with that. I believe the first year we were at the legislature was in 2019. And so over the course of those years, we ultimately were able to get this passed along with other things in the 2023 Transportation Omnibus Bill. But this, if it sounds familiar, it was a big part of what at that time was our administrative citations proposal that we brought forward for many, many years.
Thank you. And I'm told you need to introduce yourself, please.
Oh, great. Sorry, Madam Chair. My name is Judd Shetton, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council.
Thank you, Mr. Shetton.
Thank you.
All right, moving on, or moving back. Thank you.
Almost done. All right, the final layer of presence that we'll highlight is our Metro Transit Police Department, who obviously play a very critical role in maintaining the safety of our system, and through a whole community approach to public safety are continuing to coordinate with all of our layers of presence. Staffing levels do continue to be an area of focus, with the number of full-time officers at 109 compared to the budgeted amount of 171. All right, moving on into fare inspections. These were conducted primarily by MTPD officers and community service officers until the start of the administrative citation program, which occurred in December of 2023. Now with the administrative citation program, inspections are primarily conducted by our TRIP personnel. The table shows the total number of fare inspections for each of the previous three calendar years, including as a percentage of ridership, which shows a four-fold increase in the number of inspections since 2022, along with an increase in the rate of inspections as a percentage of ridership. As also required in the report, on this slide you can see the details, warnings, and citations for fare compliance offenses, which show that fare citations are up 2.5 times since 2022. Oops, sorry. And then also on this slide is a table that shows the total count of crimes reported by MTPD for calendar years 2022, 2023, and 2024, which shows reported crime down 6% in 2024 when compared to 23.
Ms. Linnell, yep. Could I interrupt you? Could you explain why on this slide in 2024 there was zero criminal citations?
Madam Chair. That has to do with the fact that the administrative citation program was fully implemented at that point, which means, so what we're showing here is just fare citations. In the report, you can see all citations issued by PD, but this table here is just focusing on fare citations, which are now administrative citations as of 2024, the full year of 2024.
So to be clear, they're just classified a different way?
Correct.
Okay, and members, that table is on page 15 in the legislative report. So thank you, Ms. Linnell. Keep going. Or forward, I should say.
All right. And so as covered today and presented, Metro Transit continues to be in the process of implementing a number of key initiatives aimed at improving transit safety and customer experience. That work very much continues now that we are in 2025. Through all these efforts, we continue to actively collect and evaluate how these programs are performing and are collecting input and ideas from our customers, from our workforce, and from other key stakeholders. We are actively collecting data. However, we believe these programs hold promise. However, we are still quite early in the implementation phase, and therefore we are not yet in a position to have adequate amounts of data to fully assess their impact. But we are committed to their ongoing work and look forward to providing future updates on our progress. With that, happy to take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I failed to mention earlier that we have Metro Transit General Manager Leslie Kanderas, as well as our Acting Police Chief Joseph Dotseth here as well, if there are any specific questions. I know that time is tight, but we brought everybody in case there was going to be any specific questions that they could help with.
Excellent. So, committee members, again, if you have questions for the general manager, the chief of staff, or the chief of police, looks like we already have a list. Senator Nelson has a first question. Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question on your slide about the Metro Transit Police Department. And I noticed that looking at the amounts budgeted for the different types of officer staff, administration staff, administrative staff, it looks like, and then you showed the headcount as well, which was significantly less. It looks like maybe 180 openings that were budgeted for but were not filled. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit. I'm curious about if you think they need to be filled. Could you not get people qualified people to apply, and where's the budgeted money that wasn't spent on the 180 less employees?
Thank you, Senator Nelson. We have a new testifier. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Chair, members, my name is Joe Dotseth. I'm the Interim Chief of Police at Metro Transit. Chair, Senator, I'll try to answer that question the best I can. So for full-time officers, yeah, that is correct. We're at 109, and there should be 171. You know, we're doing all kinds of different efforts, more so in our cadet program, which is our community service officer program. So all hands on deck to try to increase that number. The part-time officer budget number, it should be 14 full-time equivalent. So as we do those final numbers that you're talking about there, it's a little bit of a shift there. And then our community service officer program in the 2025 budget, that actually went down to 55. Because we did shift some resources to our administrative staff there. So we're in full swing to try to recruit all the staff members there to get full-time staff. To the money that's left over, I'd have to maybe ask Jillian to help me with that. I know it goes back into transit.
Mom, Dolores.
Thank you. Senator, do you have any additional? Okay, Senator Nelson, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I apologize for that call. I'm curious, though, so where is the unspent funds, then, for the maybe 180, or I'm not exactly sure how many were budgeted for, but have not been hired on yet?
Ms. Linnell?
Sorry, Senator. As part of our annual operating budget, we do, make adjustments to account for where we are actually seeing where trends are heading, and then also any remaining funds do roll over into the following year and are available for additional uses in the budget or for additional needs outside the budget.
The final
Senator
question,
Nelson?
Madam Chair. Thank you. And I think you alluded to this. So is this the proper headcount that you think you need, and was it budgeted appropriately in 2024? I mean, are you looking at kind of the same type of positions and numbers and the same budgetary costs?
Ms. Linnell, or Mr. Is it Gotcha?
Dotseth, yes, Chair Dotseth, D-O-T-S-E-T-H, D-O-T-S-E-T-H.
Oh, dot. I'm sorry, I apologize.
Chair, Senator, great question. That is what our goal is to get to. And with the recruiting efforts that we have right now, I've seen more interest in the Transit Police Department over the last couple of months and just all the applications that we see. I think that is the right amount. That is the amount that we should have up on the screen, and that's what we are working towards.
Oh, thank you. And maybe one final just comment,
Senator
Madam
Wilson.
Chair. You know, I really appreciate that. I will just say that I took the green line from like here to the state fair, stopping, you know, for the bus connection. And I would just say I would have been much more comfortable had there been more support on that train. I was scared. I didn't know if I was going to get out of there without some large fight breaking out amongst people that were using drugs. I mean, I'm just saying this was the middle of the day. So I think this is a good move to try and get more support on these trains. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this is for Ms. Linnell. So looking at the trip portion of it, so I just want to make sure I'm reading this right in the report. So there's 1,871 citations issued in 2024, and the total citations fees that were collected is $570. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Ms. Linnell. Okay.
Senator, yes.
Sorry, thank you. Does that seem low? It just seems like we're spending an awful lot of time, and I understand the overall what we're trying to do is make it safer so people ride, but 1,871 citations and only three tickets were paid the actual fee of not having a ticket. Is that right?
Wow. Ms. Linnell?
Senator, correct. Now, I will just note that the cases that are resolved in 2024 are not necessarily directly tied to the ones that are issued in 2024, because there is a lag potentially in data as you follow up on these administrative citations. But correct, that is the data, and that is something we are aware of, and we are continuing. As we noted, the role of the TRIP agents on the system is to do a multitude of things, and fare compliance is only one of those. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, what we hear from the public and our riders is that their presence is essentially what folks really value and what we continue to prioritize in terms of trying to make the riding experience as best as possible.
Thank you. Senator Jasinski.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And then, do we have a total number what the cost of the TRIP program is, or what's the staffing cost to do this program?
Ms. Linnell.
Yes, Senator, we could definitely follow up and get you those budgeted numbers.
Okay.
I don't have them off the top of my head. I apologize.
And thank you. And last question, Madam Chair. So of the 1,871, 41 were basically resolved, and so the other ones were there's just no resolve to any of those. It just they didn't pay them, and nothing happened. Is that correct?
Ms. Linnell?
Senator, yes, we continue to issue follow-ups for those, but yes, correct. That is, yes.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you.
Are you done?
Sure.
Anybody else? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to pick up on Senator Jasinski's line of questioning. I take from the citations number is, you know, quite a few more citations have been issued, which was the goal of lowering the threshold from a criminal violation to an administrative violation. So there's more people who are engaging in non-payment of fare evasion are being caught and tagged, and not thrown into the court system, where the court system typically would just throw those out because they didn't think the sanction was as serious as the crime didn't fit the sanction, and so the court system didn't take it very seriously. Plus, we were getting people kind of snared up in a criminal proceeding whose lives are already really really messy, and we're trying to get people extracted. Blah blah. We've talked about this a million times. But the theory of the administrative citation was gain more enforcement, but also more follow through. Whether that's paying a fine or, through some sort of a way to work out through, restorative justice or, some sort of agreement not to reoffend, et cetera. Do we have any of those measures is my question? Are some of these administrative citations being resolved by alternative means? And what is the level of recidivism? And are we able to track additional fare enforcement with the other kind of social disorder behaviors that, you know, that's kind of a leading indicator of social disorder. I mean, just the complete kind of anything goes environment of the trains and the buses manifested in non-compliance with fares, kind of the broken windows theory. Do we have any ways of measuring and tracking the theory of reducing the fare citation to administrative level?
Metro Transit, whoever
kind of
wants to respond.
But you kind of get the gist, right?
I can take a start, but go ahead.
Chair, Senator, I can talk a little bit about maybe the broken windows theory idea. So I've been a police officer for 24 years. 21 of those years will be at Metro Transit. And I can definitely say that the safety security action plan that the chief of staff talked about really was a game changer for us, because we talked about this whole community approach to public safety. As we get more presence on the system, we have more visibility of official presence out there. It really does matter. We're seeing that in some of the crime numbers that are decreasing. I will like to know, lots of times I like to talk about the work that the officers are doing out there. It's actually in the chart in the report on page 18. It is on page 18 there, on table 8 there. That total number of crimes are reported at 7,402. You know, over half of that is proactive police work. So our officers are out there on the system interacting with issues that need to be addressed. So back to this broken windows theory, I think having trip agents out there, more presence on the system definitely helps. And we definitely, as the police department, you know, like having that additional presence out there, because again, safety security action plan being a real game changer for us, that all of the layers of presence and all the stuff that we're doing out there really does matter. So I can certainly talk about that from their broken windows theory. And
thank you. Senator Dibble, follow up?
Excuse me, I'm going to make a concluding statement because I'm going to need to dash here in just a minute. So I agree, all the policy changes that were done in conversation, consultation with Metro Transit, the Met Council, as well as all the ideas that we brought, as representing our constituents, are positive, and and the trends are definitely in the right direction. Clearly, the real solution is going to be to get more riders, get more eyeballs, more, that clearly has a tonic effect on just all the behaviors, social disorder, crime, et cetera. But something to remember is an experience like Senator Nelson's, you don't get to repeat, because, I bet Senator mm-hmm. Nelson's not going to take the Green Line ever again to the state fair from the state capitol. So, all the progress is great, but it takes one experience for a lot of riders to put them off transit forever. Mm-hmm. And so we just got to be sensitive to, being proud of the trends. And I know it's a long haul and it's a lot of work, but we always need to feel that urgency. I happen to be a slightly more resilient and can, I'll get back on the train having seen unbelievable things. But a lot of people won't, and I can't criticize them for that, because that feeling of lack of security, lack of safety in close quarters is intense and acute. And so or even just reading about it in the paper, keeps a lot of people off transit. So, the usability of a vital, vital system to many people's lives is at stake. So thank you for your work, and let's keep going. Let's feel that urgency.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, and to Senator Dibble's point, we talked a bit earlier about our TSIP program, where we were working with community. We had a grant that was part of funds that were funded in 2023. We wanted to make sure that we continued that work. And as the acting chief mentioned, we want to add more staff to our across the public safety complement at the Met Council as well. And we've heard this a number of times. It's that one-time experience. And Senator, I apologize that happened. We would like to have you come back. We are leaning in. We're doing everything that we can to do that. We are actively recruiting, like I said, to make sure that we can make this a welcoming, enjoyable experience and a choice experience that people will use. And we are making some gains It is difficult, but I'll give our staff at Metro Transit a ton of credit for trying to do that. And I think it's important for us to keep continuing to come back to the Senate Transportation Committee to provide you updates on this, to make sure that you know what we're up to as well, because you've given us a lot of opportunity and funds to make sure that we're doing this. And so it's our pleasure to be here today and talk about it and be held accountable.
Thank you, Mr. Shenton. Senator Jasinski, you have 35 seconds to answer your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Because we must adjourn by 5:15.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to echo on Senator Dibbles and Senator Nelson's, again, a concern. So I remember a few years back when we implemented this program, and, we thought that, nobody prosecutes these. We weren't getting any money. And looking at the numbers, we have 1,570 fare violations, and that should have been $35 a piece. That's $54,950 that we kind of expected to come in into this program because of that, because they weren't going through the other process of that. So again, and we're only receiving 105, to my understanding, my calculation, actually $105 came in. That's less than 0.1% coming back as part of that. And again, I got to be transparent. I don't ride it. I've from the rural areas. I did it once, and I, as same center as Nelson is, I won't ride it again just because I don't feel comfortable there. I did it for one event, and I just would not do it. So I don't know what we need to do, but we're spending an awful lot of money on it statewide, and if people aren't going to ride it, it gets frustrating for the people that are paying those taxes no matter how they pay them. So thank you.
Understood. Thank you, Senator Jasinski, and we are adjourned. And let's have a field trip of the Transportation Committee on the Green Line.